Premier Christian Newscast.
Almost nobody had heard of Sir Paul Marshall until a few weeks ago, but thanks to his Twitter account, the multi-millionaire hedge funder and media mogul has become briefly famous, or perhaps I should say infamous. An investigation has revealed that Marshall had a private Twitter account which had liked and reposted dozens of hardline anti-Muslim and far-right tweets. As well as owning a slew of right-wing media outlets, what is more interesting for our purposes is that Marshall is also deeply embedded in the church world, sitting on boards and funding projects including the HDB Church Planting Network and the Church of England's new Centre for Cultural Witness. But should we care that a man who has pumped in millions of pounds into church ministry might hold in private some quite extreme political views? Are Christians too casual about partnering with people who actually hold very different values to them? And how should we think about the growing numbers of Christian figures who are getting involved in right-leaning politics and perhaps drifting towards the radical fringes in the process? I'm Tim Wyatt, and you're listening to the Premier Christian Newscast. This week, I'm joined by Sam Hales and Emma Fowle from Premier Christianity magazine to discuss Paul Marshall's dubious tweets and what this might tell us about conservative politics in the church. Well, hello, Sam and Emma. Thanks for joining us, as always. The story we wanted to tackle today was one I think you probably both must have seen about Sir Paul Marshall. Not a particularly famous person, but surprisingly influential, I've been reading and learning about him. He's a multi-millionaire hedge fund owner, and he's also been significantly invested in the media, set up groups like Unheard, and he co-owns the TV news channel GB News and is apparently trying to buy the Telegraph and the Spectator. And for our interests, he's also deeply connected with HTB and their church planting network. But the reason he's in the news, as you probably know, is because the anti-extremist organization Hope Not Hate has unearthed a secret or anonymous Twitter account he's had, which has repeatedly liked and retweeted content from an array of what they describe as far-right and conspiracy theorist accounts, including endorsing tweets that call for mass deportations and suggest a civil war between native Europeans and, quote, fake refugee invaders is imminent. Have you guys followed this story? Have you heard of Paul Marshall? What did you make of it when you saw it?
Yes. So I think Paul Marshall is incredibly influential. As you say, he's not well known, but behind the scenes is playing a very active role in, I guess, the right of centre media. And certainly if he were to buy The Spectator and The Telegraph, would end up with almost a monopoly, if there is such a thing, on the kind of right of centre media. Because between GB News, The Spectator, The Telegraph, Unheard, they're all right-leaning media channels. As you say, the interest for us is really that he is such a big key player in the church world as well, in that he's got a lot of links to HTB, Holy Trinity Brompton. He sits on their Church Revitalisation Trust board. And these tweets did put him in the spotlight when the news broke. And it was a Hope Not Hate investigation, but it was also unearthed by the News Agents podcast. And if you listen really to their coverage, they were really arguing this was very serious. This is very far right. These are very extremist views to the point that we shouldn't have this person anywhere near the media. And that is a perspective, but I don't think it's the only perspective on this story.
What's an alternative perspective? What do you think? This is a bit of a storm in a teacup?
I think the first thing to say is, if you were seeking to defend Sir Paul Marshall, the first thing you'd say is he's not said a word himself here. He's liked and he's retweeted. Now, if you spend a lot of time on Twitter, you will know that, and I do this myself, when I like a tweet, it's not because I like it, it's because I'm bookmarking it. So that's the first thing to say. The other thing is, people on Twitter will often say, retweet is not an endorsement. So I think if you were wanting to defend him, you could say that. Because these aren't his words, they're other people's words. And yes, he's pressing buttons on these tweets, but is that really enough for the huge breaking news story that kind of erupted a couple of weeks ago? Now, as I say, that's if you wanted to be kind to him and you wanted to defend him. The other side would say, but look at the things he's liking, look at the things he's retweeting. And people would say, this is not within the realms of what should be public debate. This is on the far right extremist end. And I think to get into that, you'd have to look at the nitty gritty of what the tweets actually said. But I think that's where the divide is. And that's where this becomes one of those culture war issues, sadly, where you just have two sides shouting at each other. And you have the far left saying, we need to kick this guy out of public life. And you have the far right saying his views are perfectly normal. And I think the truth lies somewhere in between. But it's one of those where you draw the line. If you're the type of person that likes listening to a kind of GB news outlet, you'd probably have a lot more sympathy for a Paul Marshall than you would if you're a Guardian reader, for example.
And yeah, before we go any further, I guess for fairness and journalistic probity, I should say that Paul Marshall was kind of confronted by Hope Not Hate about their investigation into his Twitter account, he deleted all the tweets and most of the likes and then said in a statement, a spokesperson said on his behalf, Paul Marshall posts on a wide variety of subjects and those cited represent a small and unrepresentative sample of over 5,000 posts. This sample does not represent his views. As most Twitter users know, it can be a fountain of ideas, but some of it is of uncertain quality and all his posts have now been deleted to avoid any further misunderstanding. So that's Paul Marshall's kind of defense, I suppose, that these are a small sample of his overall output, don't represent his views, and it's you know, he posts on a wide variety of subjects and is interested in lots of different things. I guess the bigger question I'm interested in, Emma, and look, you know, your thoughts on this, do the private political opinions of someone matter if you're kind of collaborating with them in a church context, in ministry, full mission? Should we care about Paul Marshall's personal political views about immigration or Islam or culture war stuff?
Yeah, it is a really difficult question, isn't it? And it is what, you know, Sam and I, well, all three of us, we're all journalists, aren't we? We live and work and breathe in this world. There are, you know, different organisations have different viewpoints on what is your own personal view and what is okay for you to express in public. And all of this stuff, for me, raises some really interesting questions. Most of the time, it just makes me think, oh my days, we should all just get off the keyboard. Like, if we're all just having conversations face to face around a dinner table, it would be a lot less complicated, wouldn't it, than having every keystroke, every button press, every word we've ever committed to the screen and to the internet preserved for posterity and dissected potentially out of context or, you know, by people that don't know us. And all of those things are the things that do fuel the culture wars. And so, yeah, part of me is just like, maybe we just shouldn't do Twitter, X, social media, full stop. But then, yeah, part of me is like, well, this is the world we live in. We cannot disengage from it. So how do we do it wisely? And at what point do we say we will not associate with that organization because of that person and something they have and haven't done? I just think we draw the line too quickly and too harshly sometimes in terms of that. And if organizations are set up well and their governance is right, we have to ask the question, well, does it matter? Does it matter that one man has a view? Is that really the worrying, dangerous thing that people like Hope Not Hate say that it might be? Or can the organizations that he happens to own function healthily regardless of his view? I don't know the answer to that, but a lot of it would lie in media regulation, I would argue, rather than in his own expression.
I think it's a good point saying, how much influence does this person have? I mean, if I had to bring this closer to home, there are people who I'm very grateful to who donate to the Ministry of Premier. We also have subscribers who pay for the content. Never once in my time here at Premier, which is getting on for 8 years now, never once has a donor said, Sam, you need to print XYZ or not print XYZ. Never once has someone said you can or can't put that on the front page of your magazine. And so the question then becomes, so what? Okay, so Paul Marshall has some views I might disagree with and he's funding the media platform, whatever I might work for. Does it affect me as a journalist or an editor or an editorial director? The answer may well be no. Now, I don't know. I don't know because I've not worked for Unheard or GB News. And maybe the setup is completely different. Maybe at GB News, those that fund it have a huge sway over the editorial direction. I'm just saying it's possible to be part of a media outlet, as I am here at Premier, And it's not true that those who fund us are inputting into every editorial decision that's made. It basically never happens, at least in my experience. So I think there's a genuine question there of, so what if he holds these particular views? Does it actually influence the content? And I would suggest that it is probably those who are the editors, the editorial directors, the kind of paid employees that have far more say over what goes on than perhaps those funding them. But as I say, I don't know that for sure, but that is based on my experience that sometimes people like to create a bit of a story and say, well, who's funding you? And I just sit back and say, well, it doesn't matter who's funding you. Does it actually make any difference to what you do and your mission and your output?
I guess, I think that's a really good point. And you can certainly, if you look at a website like Unheard, it's a very diverse, sprawling kind of site. I mean, I agree with you that it kind of leans to the right if you had to pin it on the spectrum somewhere, but it posts content and opinion columns by a wide variety of people expressing a wide variety of views. I'm sure lots of them don't line up with Paul Marshall's own perspectives. GB News, perhaps a slightly different story, has a bit of a clearer, kind of more crisp, integrated agenda, which I would say that you probably can draw at least some ideological connections between some of the tweets that Paul Marshall has been liking and reposting. But again, I have no idea. We don't know whether he is, if that's just, you know, independently GB News is set up to kind of push that view forward. I think on the church side, it's worth pointing out that it's not just he's on the board of CRT, which is HDB's kind of church planting charity. He's also on the board of St. Paul's Theological Center, which is HDB's kind of theology wing, and helped set up St. Miletus College, which is a big theological training college in London and elsewhere. And he's also, interestingly, he's one of the donors apparently towards the Center for Cultural Witness, which is a new initiative set up by Bishop Graham Tomlin in the Church of England, which is now based out of Lambeth Palace and publishes primarily an online magazine called Seen and Unseen, and is an attempt to try and, I guess, inject kind of Christian thinking into the intellectual conversation going on in the UK. And he's also got close ties with things like the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship, ARC, which I know you guys have covered in the magazine recently, and is lots of kind of right-leaning Christians are interested and involved in. So he's clearly not just a kind of media magnate or would-be media magnate, but he's also quite deeply enmeshed with a lot of the kind of small-c conservative Christian community here in the UK. Figures like Philippa Stroud or Tim Montgomery or Christopher Chandler, who founded the Legatum Institute. Do you guys have any thoughts on how that kind of ecosystem, that kind of, I don't know how you would call it, kind of woke, skeptical, pro-free speech kind of ecosystem is developing? Because there's an interesting number of Christians involved in that. It's not just Paul Marshall. You might cite figures like Calvin Robinson or Gavin Ashenden and others. It feels like there's a growing movement of Christians in that kind of populist, radical right political space.
Yes. I think it's hard, Tim, because even in just the names you've reeled off, there are absolutely similarities, but there's also some key differences. And some of the names you've reeled off, I would say some of those people are more likely to be proud of terms like, I mean, I've seen some of those people be proud of terms like far right, whereas other people in that list would shy away completely from that term and say, no, goodness, I'm not far right. And similarly with some of the more kind of conspiratorial elements of that scene, you know, there's people in that scene that are quite kind of academic, serious, well-reasoned. There are others that are not, frankly. So I think it's hard to categorize it as a movement. All that said, you are right. I mean, ARC is a good example of that, ARC, which was this conference, inaugural conference last autumn. Jordan Peterson was involved. A lot of Christians were involved in that conference. And there is this sort of, I think I'd term it almost like new confidence, a growing confidence amongst those who are kind of right of centre, and a renewed vision to say, we are proud of our Christian heritage. And I think a lot of those people, they're not, again, they would avoid the far right terminology. They'd say, no, we're center right. We're proud of our Christian heritage. And we're just going to be a bit more vocal in speaking up for that, whilst avoiding the pitfalls of the far right. So I think that's where the clash is between the sort of center right and the far right, and all of them owning that Christian label, but outwork it in quite some quite some different ways. And I think that's why this Sir Paul Marshall story is so interesting. It's like, where exactly do you peg him? Because, you know, before I sound like I'm being too kind to the guy, let me just read one of the tweets that I think, you know, I can see why this has caused controversy. He says, a matter of time, he reposted someone else who said, a matter of time before civil war starts in Europe. The native European population is losing patience with the fake refugee invaders. Now, that's very incendiary, very controversial language that I would not use, that a lot of the people you've listed, Tim, I think would not use. So, you know, I think that kind of rhetoric, I can see exactly why Hope Not Hate and others are saying this is really harmful and divisive and we don't want that. And I think that kind of rhetoric would not be shared by the average centre-right Christian. So, you know, I'm struggling because it's such a good question, Tim, but there's a lot in what you've said that I think is true.
Premier Christian Newscast. Premier Christian Newscast.
And I wonder, I think it's particularly striking. You talked about the renewed confidence. I feel like if we were having this conversation 10 years ago, there was, of course, a kind of right movement in politics, as there always is. But there would have been hardly any Christians, or at least those who were involved would not be particularly vocal about their Christianity. And yet you saw at the ARC conference, and you see in the pages of GB News and Unheard. I mean, we talked about on this podcast about Ayaan Hirsi Ali recently and her conversion. There is a sense in that Christian thinking is now infused into this kind of right turn, this new right, whatever you want to call it, in a way that wouldn't be the case as recently as 10 years ago. And I think that's a really interesting and potentially quite significant shift, and something that people within the church side who are involved in politics need to kind of reflect on, because there's an increasing number of people who would quite openly ally with them on the grounds of faith.
Yeah, and I think that's a reflection of the way that society and culture have moved on other social and ethical issues, like, you know, the resurgence of Christians identifying as small C conservative is because culturally we've shifted to a much more liberal position on particularly things like sexual ethics, gender and abortion and those types of issues. So whereas once maybe the average, in inverted commas, Christian would feel quite happy saying that they were part of the majority in terms of those types of views, now we're increasingly perhaps feeling like, oh, we're outliers, we're speaking up against the cultural current. And for some, that has meant that they have shifted almost, felt like they've had to sort of shift in terms of the politics that they identify with to say, no, I'm on the right. And for some reason, saying that you're on the right, even if it is quite centre-right, is suddenly perceived as quite a negative thing. And then it becomes conflated with far right and these ideas of racism and homophobia and all these other very, very negative connotations that most Christians would not identify with. And then it becomes the culture war. Then you've got both sides shouting at each other and people getting really angry. And as Christians, that's a really, really hard path to tread, because in some respects you've got two things really hard, you know, fighting against one another. Most Christians would say they would strive to be loving, caring, inclusive individuals, and yet suddenly taking a line, you know, for example, protecting the unborn child is no longer seen as loving, it's seen as anti-women. And that's a new position that a lot of us are having to navigate. And maybe that's why these angry arguments are flaring up so much, because people just don't know how to articulate well how they feel and how they sit within it all anymore.
And I feel like you're absolutely right there, that there is this kind of shift, and there's going to be an interesting dilemma, which I guess HDB in this instance are kind of wrestling with, which is that we can find, if you're kind of small C socially conservative, there are an increasing numbers of kind of potential allies in the political sphere, in the business world, people like Paul Marshall, who might share your views on the unborn child or on gender identity or on any number of things, free speech, et cetera, et cetera. And it's tempting to kind of, let's jump in bed, let's make common cause, except that it might turn out actually some of these people have quite different worldviews, or quite different values underpinning, even if they've got to the same place. You know, do we think it's likely HDB would have invited Paul Marshall onto the board of their church planting movement if they'd
known, if he was openly that, you know, he thought some, you know, Muslims were invading Europe to replace the white native population or whatever it is, I think it's unlikely. So I wonder if there's a question there about, do we need to be more discerning about where we find our kind of political allies and our fellow travellers?
I wonder if the problem here...
Or do we just need to tell them to be quieter on X? I don't know. Maybe he just hasn't been through the Church of England press and media training.
Picking
up on that, I wonder if the problem here is less the views. Well, it is the views, but it's less the views. It is how they're expressed. I mean, you know, if I was trying to be charitable here, if I used the quote I said before about a matter of time before civil war starts in Europe, you know, being invaded by fake refugee invaders, which again I think is pretty outrageous, and I don't think should be said. I'm happy to go on record like that. That said, if that tweet read, "I am concerned about the high levels of immigration in the UK, and I think more should be done politically," I don't think you'd have any trouble getting on any board on any Christian. So for me, it's, and again, Paul Marshall needs to be responsible for the things that he has retweeted. Absolutely. At the same time, I do think Twitter and X forces a culture on us where everything gets shorter and shorter. And it also amplifies voices that are more extreme. And I've certainly seen this on my own timeline, even in recent years, that I feel like I'm being fed more and more extreme stuff that I wasn't a few years ago. And so, I that's my nervousness here. My nervousness with a story like this is Hope Not Hate appear to be just this kind of neutral organisation, or even the news agents, just a neutral, impartial podcast. And they're not. Like, I think both those organisations are left of centre. And so my nervousness here is this just goes into a culture war of those who are on the left think this is a great excuse to bash the right. And my nervousness here is I think actually there's a bit more to it going on, and I'm opposed to us just becoming more and more kind of angry and getting more and more into our silos and just throwing stones over and against the other one. And I think on all of this, I do can't help but feel like Jesus would challenge all of it. You know, was Jesus left wing? Was Jesus right wing? It's clearly the wrong question to be asking. And I think actually, if you are known as a right of centre person and also a follower of Jesus, then I think Jesus has questions for you. But equally, I think if you are known as being left of centre and you're a follower of Jesus, I think Jesus would challenge you on some things. And I just don't think as Christians we can fall into the trap of just pigeonholing ourselves on either extreme. Would be my view on this.
And I would add to that, like, you know, we talked earlier about, oh, he's on this board and he's on that board, and does it worry us at all that, especially within the Christian world, it is quite small, and as humans we tend to gravitate towards people who think like us, and in the media obviously this is also a problem. I would question whether it is wise for one individual, whatever their views, to own and control multiple media outlets, because the more that happens, the less opportunity we have for a variety of views to be heard. So, you know, maybe it's more that we try to broaden out those conversations. I don't think it should take organisations like Hope Not Hate to potentially, as some people have accused them, of trying to stir the pot because they don't want him to take over the Telegraph. Maybe that's not the question. Maybe the question is, should he be allowed to own a news channel and an online media thing and two newspapers? You know, is that healthy? And is it healthy as Christians that we have the same people around the tables of all of the big boards of all of the big organisations? Because invariably that is going to lead to a lack of diversity of ideas and thinking and more silos and more polarisation. And maybe we need to broaden that out and it not just be held by people who have a lot of money and certain views and certain connections.
I think there's another important angle to this story, which is that it raises questions about whether parts of the church, HDB in particular, might have got a little bit too close to power and to wealth and to status. And, you know, there are potentially questions to be raised about, you know, is it healthy to have a man worth £800 million who's a hedge fund owner and a media magnate on your board? I mean, it looks cool. It looks kind of, HDB is such powerful, heavyweight player, but actually there's a risk that it diminishes the church's ability to do that kind of prophetic, probing, challenging, slightly more outsidery role to speak against the kind of agglomerations of power and wealth and capital and status and politics in this country. And I just think there's always the allure of saying, well, let's get the most like heavyweight people we can on our board, or let's have the let's just get one massive million-pound donor. But actually, there's something really powerful in saying, well, could we not be funded by lots of little people giving little amounts of money? Or, you know, could we not fill our board with someone you've never heard of from a different part, not from London, but who's got a really interesting perspective and experiences to share, and just broaden the conversation, like you say, rather than it just always accumulating around the same tiny handful of people.
Yep, 100%.
And just one last one, because I know we need to wrap up soon, but I thought what you said, Sam, about the kind of radicalization of the kind of internet is really significant. And, you know, and I'll lay my cards on the table. I don't share Paul Marshall's politics. I'm kind of left of center when it comes to immigration. But I absolutely would agree and believe that there should be a kind of honored, legitimate space for Christians to be conservatives and to hold view that immigration should be reduced and, you know, to have, there's a good debate to be had there. And if you look at Paul Marshall's background, you know, he used to be a Lib Dem, you know, pre-Brexit, he was a Lib Dem. And now he's been on this journey, it seems like, if we can kind of judge from his online activity, of switching to become a conservative and then drifting, as you spend more time on YouTube, on X, on Twitter, hearing more, amplifying more of his extremist voices, to kind of retweeting stuff that I think, you know, you could justifiably say toes the line of outright racism. There's something about how do we, you know, ensure that there is a plurality of views within the church. We're not trying to force everyone to share our own political belief, but also encourage people not to spend so much time that they get always pushed to the extremes, whether that's left or right. You know, I have just as much concerns about people spending too much time on kind of hardcore socialist Twitter and ending up being kind of communist or whatever.
It sounds like a brilliant argument for why people should subscribe to Premier Christianity magazine, Tim, where we'll give you the full breadth of Christian perspective. And
you're such a gross.
That is literally why I'm not even kidding. This is why we exist. And do write in and challenge me if we're getting the balance wrong. I'm absolutely determined that we will give you a full theological and political spectrum of Christian voices, because we believe it's important for the church to be listening to each other. And you're right. You don't get, increasingly, you do not get that from social media. And you know, even GB News and similar channels, I do have concerns about. And I think you can see it. I mean, you can see it in friendship groups sometimes, in family, in society, in church friends. You can start to see this. You know, the media does have an impact and it does shape people. And I always remember a quote that stuck in my mind from someone in America who said that they'd lost their Christian parents to Fox News. And they said that these are wonderful, godly Christian parents. And as they retired and just spent more and more hours in front of Fox News, they became more and more radical in their politics, to the point that it was really difficult to have a conversation with them about anything because they were quite angry. And you know, I think that can happen on the left just as much as it can happen on the right. That if we allow this stuff to become all-consuming in our lives, it does shape us in a way that's not healthy for our discipleship. So I think that is the warning here, is whatever media you're consuming, try and have a bit of a more well-rounded balance. And obviously, Premier, we'll play our part in hoping to help you in that way. But it's not just down to us. It's down to all journalists to try and kind of hold that centre ground a bit better and not let people just get distracted off into the edges, because I do think it's harmful.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's draw it a close there with a call to action, which is, if you haven't already, subscribe to Premier Christianity for the low, low price of...
Brilliant. We've always got special offers running, Tim. So yes, the latest offer is you can get the next three print issues for just $5.99 at premierchristianity.com.
They're giving it away. They're literally giving it away. Unbelievable value. Thanks, Emma. Thanks, Sam. And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, bye-bye.
That's it for this week's Premier Christian Newscast. But before you go, please do leave us a review on your podcast app of choice. And why not tell a friend about the show too? And if you'd like even more church news analysis, you can also subscribe to my new free email newsletter, The Critical Friend. Each week, I send an email packed with links to interesting things happening in the church world and my commentary on them. Just visit tswyatt.substack.com. to find out more and subscribe. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Premier Christian Newscast.